Well, hey everybody, welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to think outside the box of convention, and man, I'm not messing around tonight. So before I bring on my guest, I'm really excited to have him back. I just want to make a few announcements, and they have to do with some pretty ridiculous stuff that I'm hearing through the waves. Please pay attention to what you're eating, for God's sakes. A girl, I think she was 12 years old, found a used condom in her Big Mac. Please stop eating meat, folks. Come on. Get with the program. Healthy food. Vegetables. Grow your own. You better get used to it because the Codex Alimentarius is intent upon making you as sick as possible and is dependent on possible on utter pure crapola. Okay, that's my first announcement. The second one is thanks to everybody who was on the program with me in England. Man, did we have a wonderful time walking through the veils, through the magic of England and the crop circles. And I had a wonderful time with you. You are my soul family. I know you're listening in, so thank you, Shelley and Allie and Eddie and all the rest of you who are tuned in. Okay, that's all I have to say because I can't waste any time when I've got only an hour to interview the man, Jim Mars. This is a guy. You know, you talk about conspiracy theory, and then you talk about conspiracy exposure, elucidation, and this is the man, Jim. You know, I want to preface this by saying that I've dedicated my life to revealing as much as I possibly can about what I intuit and know about what comes down on this planet, and it is my great honor to bring minds like Jim's out to more of you. Not that he really needs help because he's a world-renowned author. I just found out that one of his many books was called Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy. This book was a basis for the Oliver Stone film JFK, and he was a chief consultant for that. I didn't even know that. I'm going to ask him about that today. But there's so much to ask him. Jim is a freelance writer. He's an author. He's a researcher. He's a highly qualified man to discuss UFOs. His book, The Alien Agenda, I'm pretty sure that was what we discussed in his last interview. Another huge hit, Ruled by Secrecy. Maybe that was the book we discussed. I guess I'm going to have him on to discuss each book one by one. But today we're going to be discussing his latest book. Oh, my God. I got tongue-tied. I'm remembering that there was another book, Terror Conspiracy, The Provocation. Oh, my God, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. What am I going to do with you, Jim? Today we're talking about the trillion-dollar conspiracy, and I think it's very important information. Thank you, Jim. I'm thrilled to have you.
Hey, listen, it's my pleasure to be with you, Patricia. And the new book is The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy. But I'll tell you right off, I'll tell you a little secret. That was not my title. Okay. That was the editor, the publisher's title. I wanted to call this book Zombie Nation.
Because, well, that would have been a great title.
Well, yeah, actually they may have been right. They, you know, they said, no, if you call it Zombie Nation, they'll think it's a horror novel. And I said, well, it is kind of a horror story, but, well, but it's not a novel. It's real. And I'll tell you why I came up with Zombie Nation, because the, you know, they call these banks whose liabilities outweigh their assets, they're bankrupt. They're dead. And yet they're still in business because they're propped up with taxpayer money through the TARP funds. And so they're calling them zombie banks. They're dead, but they're still going through the motions. Well, the same can be applied to, the population of the United States. We're broke, dead, don't know it. Still going through the motions because, according to who you listen to, we owe between $12 and $15 trillion in debts, and yet, if every man, woman, and child in the country liquidated every asset they've got, we couldn't come up with but about $9 or $10 trillion. So we're broke, but we, of course, keep printing money, and we keep going through the motions. So we're a zombie nation.
Well, I like that title. In fact, my book, Atlantis Rising, was originally titled The Dark Side of Atlantis, and my publisher said, nah, it's too dark, but whatever. We have to listen to them, I guess. Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about. Let's talk about, first of all, geez, I mean, you are a prolific writer. I love it. How did you start this book? I mean, it was so timely. was there a sense of knowing what was coming, or the coming hard times? Was that in your mind, or did you write it since everything started melting down?
No, I was keeping up with the meltdown, and I was watching all the news that came in, and watching, you know, plus other things. I'm kind of the last of a dying breed. I'm a generalist. I know a little bit about a lot of things, and I don't claim to be a total expert in much of anything. But I was watching everything happen, and then I had the background of my other books, Ruled by Secrecy, about the secret society members who were trying to, dominate the world, the rise of the Fourth Reich, about how that the Nazi philosophy was brought over to this country, along with thousands of unrepentant Nazis from Germany after World War II, rolled into our military-industrial complex, and that began the process of setting up what is now called a national security state. You could just as well call it a national socialist state, because that's what's happening. And so I kind of got what I felt like was the big picture. And I thought, there's a lot of people out there who understand at a gut level that something's really gone wrong, but they don't understand what or who's behind it, and as a result, they don't know what to do about it. So that prompted me to write The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy, How the New World Order, Man-Made Diseases, and Zombie Banks Are Destroying America.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I just mentioned Codex Alimentarius before you came on, and it's clear that it is in full tilt boogie now.
Right, and that is a section of my book on Codex Alimentarius, and people need to be aware of this and need to start making moves to stop this. And what it is, for those of your listeners who don't know what we're talking about, this is a classic example of how they are trying to rule our lives, run our lives, by passing regulations and laws, not through our normal political system, but through trade agreements and through the United Nations. Several countries have already signed on to Codex Alimentarius, and what this is they are trying to outlaw natural minerals and vitamins. If all this becomes law and fact, you're going to have to go and pay your doctor office call fee just to get him to write you a prescription for vitamin C. And, of course, their argument would be that we're trying to protect the public from useless and even harmful substances. Well, I would only counter that by saying, look, the human race has only lived, for several thousand years now, and we didn't have regulations about minerals and vitamins, and surprisingly enough, most people survived. And we don't need that. Besides that, more and more studies and more people are waking up to the fact that natural vitamins and minerals are much better for you than petroleum-based synthetic drugs, which are being pushed on us by these powerful multinational pharmaceutical houses. And therein lies the basis of Codex Alimentarius. They can't get a patent lock and a monopoly on vitamin C, so they want to outlaw it and force you to either buy their version of vitamin C, or better yet, a synthetic version that they do have a patent monopoly on. And this is simply another way of trying to curtail the freedom of the population, and it's being done, as I said, through trade agreements with the European Union. And we agreed to go by whatever they're going to do, and they come up with something as ridiculous as outlawing vitamins, and we're going to be forced to go along with it, and our representatives, Congress, has very little or nothing to say about it unless they pass laws specifically forbidding this activity.
Well, we probably won't see that happen, considering, excuse me for being a little sarcastic here, but considering that the first ones to get the payoff for the big pharma agreements are their representatives in the Congress, wouldn't you agree?
Exactly. And that's another key point of my new book, and I'll just keep reiterating it here. We have a golden opportunity this year, okay, to exercise the power of the people. We have a vote coming up in November, and I would strongly, strongly urge everyone listening to find out who your representatives are and who your senators are, and whoever's in power, vote them out. Vote them all out. Vote of the good, bad, and the indifferent. And I can already hear people going, oh, yeah, yeah, well, you're right. We need to throw those bums in Congress out. But, hey, our guy is a good guy. We got a new fire truck. We got a new road over here. So he's a crook, but he's our crook. Well, folks, it's time to toss out that parochial view, okay?
Jim, who are you going to vote in? I mean, you of all people know that they're puppets anyway, so...
That's true, but at least we get
in that's gonna stand up to Big Pharma,
well,
Big Oil, and all the other lobbies that are in infiltrating all the government.
Right. Well, you're right. We're getting a whole new bunch of bums, but at least they're new bums, and it'll take a little while for the lobbyists to, you know, finally get them twisted around their finger, and then we can vote them out. What you do is, see, the surefire way of knowing if a politician's lying to you is watch it and see if his mouth's moving. If his mouth's moving, he's probably lying to you. And I don't say that to be totally facetious, and I don't mean that as a total disparagement of all politicians. It's simply the sad fact of life that you cannot tell the truth and get elected to office, okay? So you cannot listen to anything they say. You have to watch what they do and how they vote. And so what you do is you watch them like a hawk, and if they vote for legislation that's to the benefit of the people, then you vote them back in. And if they don't, if they yield to the lobbyists and the special interest, then you vote them out. And you know, Patricia, this is not a revolutionary idea. That's the way it's supposed to work. But it doesn't, because these people get in there and they get in office and they cuddle up with the large corporate interest and the lobbyists. They line their pockets with money. That gives them the money to buy the TV time. Their sole purpose in life then becomes to get reelected, and they've got a well-paying, cushy job for the rest of their life. And that's not the way it's supposed to work. So we need to toss them all out and start all over again. And oh yeah, we'll get some good, bad, and different coming in, but at least it'll be different, and it will send an indelible message that we're mad as hell and we're not going to take this anymore.
Well, I'm as mad as hell as you are, but I do want to play devil's advocate here and press you for this idea because, for example, I think my brother's listening. We've had this conversation about the Democrats versus the Republicans, and I keep pounding him with this. Don't you get it? We get equally mediocre representatives to hit the election floor, and whoever you vote for is equally on the take as the next guy. And to the people listening, and although you've already answered this question, I'm going to ask you again. To the people listening, what do we tell these people about who you're voting in? I mean, who are these other guys?
Okay.
We obviously have a Democratic regime now. You're by voting them out, we would be leaning toward the Republicans. The independents haven't got a prayer. So isn't this the same soup? What is the real solution that you're suggesting in your book?
Yes, you've got to understand that liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, man versus woman, heterosexual versus homosexual, religion, all of this are simply devices to divide and conquer, to keep us divided and keep us, you know, disunited so that we can't wake up and realize who's really behind it. And here's who's really behind it. Let's go back and look at the George Herbert Walker Bush administration of 1989 to 1993. Every member of his cabinet, except for Vice President Dan Quayle, who couldn't spell potato, and his old buddy Jim Baker, were members of the secretive Council on Foreign Relations, that Wall Street-backed elite bunch of financiers who meet and decide the policies for the United States, including the foreign policy of the United States.
Are you talking about the Trilateral Commission?
and the trilateral, yes, okay, and the Council on Foreign Relations, and they're all the same because the Trilateral Commission was simply an offshoot of the Council on Foreign Relations because it was formed by 7 members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So the old CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, is the granddaddy. And in George Herbert Walker Bush administration, except 2 that I mentioned, were all members of the CFR. But then we changed administration. We got a Democratic administration, the Bill Clinton administration, 1993 to 2000. Oops, every member of his cabinet, with the exception of Defense Secretary William Perry, was members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Then we get the George W. Bush administration after the selection of 2000, and Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Robert Gates, Elaine Chao, Christine Whitman, they're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Okay?
That's what I'm saying. So most people think they're voting for government representations, but what they're really voting for is...
That's right. And then we get, in November of 2008, we get change you can believe in with Barack Hussein Obama. Oops, let's look at his cabinet. Oh, Robert Gates is back in as Secretary of Defense. Janet Napolitano, Bill Richardson, Susan Rice, James L. Jones, Timothy Geithner, Larry Summer, Paul Volcker. Oops, all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So what am I telling you? Forget liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican. It's the people versus the rich party. And these folks are the rich party. And they don't care a whit about us. It's quite obvious by what they're doing. And they have domination over Congress. They either have them bought and paid for, or they have them intimidated. And
your point then is, even if these other guys are more of the same, at least it'll send a message to these guys that we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, that's right. And then the thing is, watch the new guys. And if they don't do like you think they should, vote them out, you know, and keep going until you get somebody that's honest. And if they get enough honest people in there, then maybe they can't kill all of them like they did some of them, you know. And I'm
going to say, you know, it's pretty dangerous, not life-enhancing, to be honest, in politics, yeah?
That's right. Ask Paul Wellstone.
Wellstone? I'm not informed.
Yeah, you remember Senator Wellstone? He was the one Senate chair that the Republicans needed to gain control over the Senate, and he was opposed to our occupation of Iraq, and he was raising questions about 9/11, and oops, his plane went down, even though there were 3 qualified pilots aboard.
Right.
And I won't even go into the rest of them, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Sonny Bono, you know, they all have accidents.
Yeah.
See, and that goes back to one of the key problems in this country, and that has to do with the trillion-dollar conspiracy, which is the eroding and destruction of our money. Lenin said once, the surest way to destroy a country is to debauch its currency. Well, our currency is becoming debauched. It's inflation's eating us up. They keep printing all this money and creating it out of thin air, backed by nothing, and it's slowly eating away at us. And it all goes back to money. And now we have a situation where we have the Federal Reserve System, and they have been pouring trillions of dollars of our tax dollars have been going out of this country and off to support and prop up foreign banks. And when Congress finally got up the nerve to ask Ben Bernanke, the head of the chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, head of the Fed, what happened to our money? And who'd you loan it to? What did they put up as collateral? And what are we going to get out of this? He had the effrontery to say, well, the Fed is a private business, and this is proprietary information, and I don't have to tell you that. Now, how's that for chutzpah?
How's that for power?
Power. Absolute power. They soak trillions of dollars out of our pockets and then won't even tell us what happened to it. This is gangsterism on a gigantic scale, and people just don't quite get it because these same gangsters own the media. They own the 5 corporations that now control and dominate just about everything we see and hear. And I'm not just talking about news programs. I'm talking about programming, network TV, broadcasts, satellite, cable, internet, magazines, newspapers, music, movies, even billboards. They can
it's
find
amazing people like you and me still manage to get our word out there, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. And you know, what's really disheartening to me, Patricia, is that these folks that we're up against who are deceitful, conniving, they're liars, they are almost psychopaths, and they have deep pockets. They got more money than they know what to do with because they have access to our tax money. And people like you and I, you know, we're going up again. We have to try to bring truth out against all these people who are well-heeled with our money. That's just not right.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you should say that because someone recently on Facebook was decrying New Age authors and saying that if we really are spiritual people, we should be doing our work for free. And I replied by, you know, tune into my radio show with Jim Mars. That's the truth, and it's free. And give us a break. You know, the spiritual conspiracy people are doing we're risking our lives out here. For God's sakes, how about a little support, you know?
Exactly. I mean, even enlightened beings have to eat. and to eat, you have to go buy some food. And to buy food, you got to have some money. I mean, you know, people just, they just don't get it. The New York Times, which everybody likes to quote as the most, you know, credible newspaper there is, which is, of course, not true, but they like to think it is. Does the New York Times give us news? Just, you know, out of the goodness of their heart? No, they give us news so they can sell newspapers and sell advertising to make money. It's all, you know, it's all about the money. That's at the core of our entire society. But the difference is some people do what they love to do. I fall in this category. If I wasn't making a little bit of money on my books, I'd still be doing what I'm doing because I feel like that, number one, it's interesting. Number two, it's
what was that? People. Are you there?
Yeah, what is that?
Woo! All right. Well, I'm glad you're out there doing what you're doing, Jim. And, you know, that's why you're on, because I really respect and honor all of the things that you're bringing forward. So let's get into the book a little bit, and please, imagine that, although it's not true, that this audience is really not clear on what is coming down in the financial situation in the States. And we'll have to stick with the States for the moment because it's too big to try to figure out if we bring in the whole global picture immediately. So can you break this down as far as what you're telling people in the book? What exactly has transpired in the last 2 years?
Over the last 2 years, well, they have slowly but surely, and this, again, transcends administrations. This has mostly fallen down through the Democratic administration of Barack Hussein Obama, but I'll be the first to point out and agree that the ground was laid back during past administrations all the way back to the Reagan years. When Reagan took over, his vice president was George W. Bush, and that was forced on him, okay? And then only about 2 months after he took office, Reagan was shot, and George Herbert Walker Bush took control of the government. And between he and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, who go all the way back to Gerald Ford, Dick Cheney was Gerald Ford's chief of staff at the White House, and Donald Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense. And even back then in the 70s, they were laying out a program for the Middle East, saying that we had to increase troop strength in the Middle East so we could gain control over their oil resources, and we needed to invade Afghanistan and fight the Russians. That's when we created Al-Qaeda. We created this fighting force of Arab Muslim mercenaries to go into Afghanistan and fight the Russians and try to throw them out of there.
Hello?
Hello?
Are you there, Jim?
Yeah.
Keep going.
Okay, so we brought Osama bin Laden to this country under the name Tim Osman, and there were meetings with government and FBI.
That speaks for me.
Huh?
I don't know anything about this name, Tim Osman. I mean, of course I know that we brought Obama in as a little puppet boy, but what has the name Tim Osman got to do with it? Hello? Yeah, okay, folks, we're having a little interference. Surprise, surprise. Let's see if Don can get Jim back up here on the line. We were talking about, God, it goes so deep. The deeper you go, the deeper it gets. So hold in there while we see where what happened to the line and get Jim back up and running. By the way, for those of you that are just tuning in while we get Jim back, I'm interviewing Jim Mars. His website is www.jimmars.com. And the book that we're talking about out of the many that he's done is The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. So let's hope we get him back and the line hasn't been permanently sabotaged so we can continue our conversation. Funny, though, isn't it? Just talking about Osama bin Laden and clank went the line. Not that I'm paranoid or anything. No, not me. How's it going there, Donald? That we're getting him back? Oh, this is such a challenge, you know. I mean, it's so wonderful that...
All right, can you hear me?
There he is.
I'm back, I'm back. Yeah, it seems like every time I try to give out with some real in-depth news, somehow or another the medium screws up. But anyway,
it happens so regularly on my show because I'm bringing people like you on this program, and I'm one of you too, so we're used to it. And I've got a great producer, Don, and he always manages to get back up. So while you were gone, I gave out your website so that people can find you and talked about you a little bit. So let's go back to the discussion.
All right, well, I believe I was trying to tell you that the plans for the demise of the United States goes all the way back to, way back, actually, but we'll start with the Reagan administration, and the CIA was creating a force of Arab mercenaries to go into Afghanistan and fight the Russian occupation. And one of the people that they funded was a Muslim leader by the name of Osama bin Laden, who they brought to the United States using the name Tim Osman. And I've even spoken to one of the FBI officers that was in one of those meetings. And they gave him money and encouragement and training. And he went back and created what has come to be known as Al-Qaeda. So we created Al-Qaeda, all right? And then the question now is, have they completely gone rogue, or are they still operating on behalf of orders from some people high within the United States government? And then you come on up, and also during the Reagan years, they begin to deregulate, okay? And then during the administration of George Herbert Walker Bush, they did away with the Delaney Act, which had put regulations on banks and allowed them then to go into speculative banking rather than just normal banking, which is, you know, savings accounts and checking accounts. Now, they then allowed them to get into derivatives and speculative banking, which then ballooned the whole process up. And then, of course, as we saw beginning in 2007 and 8, it began to fall apart. And this was all a plan. This is all a plan, and I'll give you the bottom line. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm very eager for you to explain to people what the bottom line is, because many people still believe that this is not a plan. And,
right.
Of course, I'm trying to bring that out. So go for it.
Well, there are now more and more people who are understanding that it is a plan. But even Dick Morrissey, the old Washington insider, was on CNN. He said, holy cow, he says the conspiracy theorists were right. And then not long back, Bloomberg, the financial publication, had a story that said secret banking cabal emerges from AIG shadows. And their lead says the idea of secret banking cabals that control the country and global economy are a given among conspiracy theorists who stockpile ammo, bottled water, and peanut butter. But after this week's congressional hearing into the bailout of American International Group, you have to wonder if these folks are crazy after all. And it goes on to say that this small cabal of international bankers have basically looted this country and sent trillions of dollars offshore, lining their pockets, and then because of their chokehold on the United States government, nobody seems able to do anything about them. We see the same thing going on in the Gulf of Mexico, where you've got a foreign business, British Petroleum, cause a catastrophic accident down there, if indeed it was an accident.
Thank you for saying if indeed it was an accident.
Yeah, and then instead of chastising them or fining them or, we put them in charge of finding out what happened and trying to clean up the mess. I mean, it's absolutely unconscionable. But,
let me just interject that if we agree that the oil cartels own the governments, yeah, it makes sense that they are the ones that told Obama what he would do. I mean,
exactly.
But the question remains, do you believe that this was a deliberate act? And if so, for what purpose?
Okay, well, we're back to the bottom line, which is they must destroy the United States of America. And here's why. Back in the 1940s, there was a British Fabian socialist by the name of Eric Arthur Blair, who in 1948 wrote a book based on, I feel confident, on his inside knowledge of what the game plan was by these rich ruling elites. And he put it all in a book, but he didn't use his name. He wrote under the byline George Orwell. And, of course, I'm talking about the famous 1984 book. And in 1984, we see that they have divided the world into three socialist blocks. And in the book, it was Oceania, Asiana, and East Asiana. In today's real world, it's the European Union, the soon-to-be North American Union, and then the eventual Asian Union. And then they play these blocks off against each other for the continuing conflict needed to support their increased profits and control over the populations. So this is the plan. And the biggest stumbling block to this plan is the United States. Why? Because we have a tradition of individual freedom and liberty. Two, we have the legal basis for this freedom and liberty, which is our Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And three, we have guns to enforce this freedom. So they've got a real problem with us. So they got to destroy us, and they're doing a pretty good job. They're debauching the currency. Our money's becoming more and more worthless. They have completely fragmented the culture by driving divisive wedges between everybody. You're liberal or conservative or a Republican or a Democrat or a Baptist or a Catholic or a black or white or red or yellow or male versus female or heterosexual versus homosexual, anything to create chaos and create divisiveness. Divide and conquer. It's the only oldest method in the world. And if you go back and look at the time, go back to World War II when we genuinely were threatened by outside enemies. We had Nazi Germany to contend with, and we had the Japanese militarist, and this was a true threat. So what did the President of the United States say? Roosevelt said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Let's buckle down, and we'll all be Americans, and we'll all think what's good for the best interest of America, and we'll all pull together, and we'll get through this." And look what our leadership says now. Be afraid. Be very afraid, but keep shopping.
What do you think is going to come down? I mean, we hear about, obviously, a coming depression. We hear about an inflationary depression or a deflationary depression. And can you elucidate that a little bit so people understand the two possibilities? Sure. And then I'd love to hear what you think is going to happen.
Well, first off, we're already in a depression that's as deep as the Great Depression of the 1930s. More banks have failed in the last 10 years than failed through the Great Depression of the 1930s. There's the unemployment rates, once you get past the government fudged numbers, and they're admitting to 12, 14% unemployment, but that's only based on people who go and claim unemployment benefits. And if they don't claim, they're not counted. So if you add in all those millions that are probably either off the system or have given up on the system and aren't even filing for unemployment, then you're probably up around 20-25%, which means one in every five Americans is out of work. So
that means like one in every four.
Yeah. So
the guys that are doing the bad news are the ones that are keeping the count anyway, right?
Exactly. Now, here's the big difference. In the 30s, it was a monetary depression, which means that the money was good. It's just that nobody had any. But if you had, you know, back in the 30s, if you had a dollar, it'd buy you a whole lot of stuff. You can buy a bag of groceries for that. But today, we're in a inflationary depression. The difference is today everybody's got money, but it's just not worth as much as it used to be. And if anybody doubts me, just think back to when you were a kid and think back how much it cost to buy, you know, one penny you'd get you some bubble gum. You can't get anything for a penny anymore. I don't know what bubble gum's going for these days, but I'm sure it's probably up to at least 5 cents and probably a dime. And,
I think you're on the twilight zone if you can think you can get bubble gum for 5 cents.
Well, there you go. See, you can't even do that. And, of course, I hadn't been chewing bubble gum in many years, but think about the hamburger. I remember in college going to get 19-cent hamburgers, okay? And, no, man, today they cost you at least a buck or a buck and a half, and in most places it's more like $3 or $4. So that's inflation, folks, and that means you got money, but you can't. It doesn't have as much buying power.
So
and
what is deflation?
Huh?
What is deflation then?
Well, deflation is when you don't have enough money, but we don't have to worry about that because they just keep printing it out. And of course, the more money that's in circulation, the less it's worth. And so that's what we have to look forward to is a inflationary depression. And unfortunately, what I can see happening, it doesn't have to happen. We can get past all this if we just wake up and understand what's really happening to us. And just the sheer knowingness of what the true situation is would cause it to change because, after all, there's more of us than there are of them. But until we wake up, what I see happening is inflation continues, wars continue, the homeland security tightens down tighter and tighter, and the more it tightens, the more people, the fringe elements will try to resist, which leads to more conflict, which leads to more crackdown, and we're just heading for a total 1984 Orwellian society of control over thought and mind through drugs and the electronic media, or we could pull together as Americans and start operating at the local level, take charge of our individual lives, take charge of our local towns and cities, and then states, and let the federal government shrivel up to the size that it was intended to by our forefathers.
What do you think of the first steps in making that concretely take place?
What's the first step?
Yeah.
Well, the first step is educate yourself, all right? And at the risk of sounding crassly commercial, read my book, the $1 trillion Conspiracy. But then there's other things.
Because they're all masterpieces, but definitely, you got to get your publicist to send me a copy because I have not read it.
You have not got it yet? I thought one was on the way.
No, please do. I really want to read it as soon as possible.
Okay.
So, all right, so we get people reading your book. We get people awakening to how deep this crisis is. And people can go two ways. Either they get disempowered and think, what's the point? or they say, okay, where do I start?
Well, so, all right, first, let me address those little things. And I hear this all the time, Patricia. People say, well, I'm just one person, you know, what can I do? Well, first off, get over it, all right? If you go back and look at the history of the world, nothing beneficial has ever been accomplished by a mob or even a committee, all right? It's always been individuals, good or bad. You can go back and look, Gandhi, Buddha, Jesus, Hitler, you know, Napoleon. These are individual people, and they've started whole movements, and they've changed the whole world. Sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. So get over it. Yeah, individuals can change everything. And
but a lot of people are really afraid of repercussions if they speak out. I mean, God knows I've started so many petitions and calling people into action, and so many people write and say they are afraid to put their name on it. And I'm like, if you are afraid to put your name on a petition to save the whales, how are we going to save this planet?
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. And where would we be? Well, I know, years ago, my own mother said, well, you know, why don't you quit writing about all that political stuff and all that conspiracy stuff? Said, you know, don't you think you might get people mad at you and they might try to do something to you, you know? And as I told her, I said, well, where would we be if the mothers of Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin all said, hey, don't be messing with the British Empire. That's the biggest, meanest empire in the world. You might get in trouble, you know. Well, you know, so where would we be? There would have been no revolution. There would have been no United States of America. You know, come on. There comes times when you have to stand up and be counted, right?
I hear you. In fact, my mother, who is long departed now, said the same thing to me. And I said, because I don't know how any other way to live. I don't know how any other way to be. I was a protester in the war in Vietnam. I've been outspoken all my life, and it's all I know how to do because it's exactly what I believe in. And my mom said, well, honey, then go for it, because only when you, and I want to share these words of wisdom with the audience, and that is, only when you have something to lose do you really know what your values are.
Isn't that the truth? That is so true. And see, this is why they are trying to push this socialist program on us. All right. Now, socialism in and of itself, you know, on paper sounds great. Socialism is defined by the ownership of the means of production controlled by the people. Well, that sounds great. And yet just think of all the crimes that's been committed in the names of the people, because it just doesn't work, because every time you set up any kind of social program, good, bad, or different, it requires central administration. There's got to be somebody that makes it run properly. And these rich, wealthy, the rich party, as I call them, they know they could buy up the bureaucracy and thus control the socialist system. And that's why they're pushing for this. And so it's an abuse of the socialist system. But another reason they want this socialist system is that if you get everybody indebted and part of your social system, and they're dependent on their food and their clothing and their jobs, security, it's depending on the government, then they have no more say in the government. The government just tells them what to do, and they have to do it. And they don't have any stake in the thing, in the system. It's just like you said, until you have something to lose, you don't know that there's anything worth fighting for. And if you're on a social program, you owe everything to the government, then, you know, you're very hesitant to bite the hand that feeds you.
That's right. Well, let me ask you this. I look at the United States, which I abandoned 26 years ago, and I see almost no rights anymore. I mean, even though people, you said that it's a land of democracy, it's an illusion. You see everything breaking down. The Constitution is no longer valid. It really isn't. You haven't really got the right to do much of anything anymore. You can be arrested in your house because you're unhealthy. You haven't taken your shots. They can just literally pull the plug on you. How far away do you think the United States is from martial law? Or do you have it already without the curfew?
Well, I tell you what, we're not too far, because I just saw a story the other day where they are now implementing a plan to allow the Postal Service to, your postman is going to come around and dispense drugs to you, okay? This is in the event of a biological, a chemical attack, of course, but then once you set up the mechanism, it can go for anything.
Wow, George Orwell must be spinning in his grave.
Absolutely. Well, now listen to this. This is just absolutely amazing. In December of 2009, President Obama issued an executive order to start this whole process, and it gives the federal agencies 180 days to develop a postal service model that could be replicated around the country. In other words, what they're going to do is if they claim there's a terrorist attack, and let's not forget the swine flu hoax of last year. We were about this time last year. We're all scared to death that we're going
right.
to get the swine flu and die, and yet it turned out to be much ado about nothing. And yet all they got to do is generate another one of these. And then they send the postman around with this vaccine, and it states here in this story that it also requires that workers delivering the drugs be accompanied by law enforcement officers to protect them from panic and potentially violent crowds. So in other words, your postman shows up with some cops with guns, and they tell you, here, you're going to take this vaccine whether you want it or not. Now, how Orwellian is that? And this, I'm not talking about a conspiracy theory here. I'm talking about a plan that is already being activated.
Okay, hold on. Where did you read about this?
This is an executive order that Barack Obama has put out on a plan that's been in, that they've been setting it up. Right now there are six cities that they're using as prototypes, and then eventually they want to spread it to all cities. And this plan is to use postal workers to come around and administer vaccines and anecdotes in the event of a pandemic or a terrorist biological attack.
And so if you don't take it, they take you away to their happy farm?
Yeah, probably so. They'll say, well, come with us, and they'll take you to a detention center.
Which would be any one of 57 FEMA camps.
Exactly.
So what do you suggest people do? Because we are going to leave off on a positive note, so we're going to have to find that note.
Right, right. Well, the positive note is there's more of us than there are of them. We simply have to get knowledgeable, number one. We have to know what's really going on, what the real plans are, not fall for the junk you hear on television. That's another good positive step. Go turn off that TV. It does have an off button on it, okay? And you're going to learn two amazing things. After a couple of weeks, you're going to realize that, number one, you haven't missed out on anything important. If World War III starts, I assure you, you will know about it. All right? And all you're going to miss out on is that daily drumbeat of inconsequential information that just keeps you upset, stirred up, and distracted. All right? And then the second thing you're going to learn after a couple of weeks is you're going to find out you can start thinking for yourself instead of thinking in terms of how the world is defined for you by the electronic media. So that's a step. And then start organizing. Start a book discussion group. Start a neighborhood watch committee. Go meet with your friends and neighbors. Run for public office. Run for the school board. Run for the local city council. Start exercising some power. A key thing would be is to go find out who your local sheriff is. The local sheriff, by law and tradition, is the highest law enforcement officer you have. And there are already some who are making some courageous steps. There was one sheriff in Montana who publicly made the announcement that if any federal officers violated the Constitution of the United States or the state constitution of Montana, that his deputies would come and escort them out of the county. And we need to start taking steps like this. And, you know, Patricia, actually it's already working because in 2005 Congress passed the Real ID Act, which required a nationally, federally approved ID card by the year 2008. Well, 2008 came and it wasn't in effect because about a dozen states said, we can't do this. not because they had idealistic or libertarian ideals, but because they said, you're telling us to do this, but you're not giving us the money to do it. Well, so they said, okay, well, we'll postpone it. And so then 2009 came, it still wasn't in effect, and more states had joined in saying, we're not going to do this. And here we are in 2010, and that law has still not gone into effect because majority of states have said, we're not going to do that. That yeah. is the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, which says that any powers not specifically delegated to the federal government, and of which actually there's only two, and that's to coin and regulate money and provide for the common defense. Everything else is up to the states. So the states can invoke the 10th Amendment, and when the federal government says, you got to have this health care plan, you got to pay for this, you got to buy this car, you've got to do this training, you have to have this curriculum in your schools, you just tell them, no, we don't.
I like the sound of that word. I think it's really, really good advice for people to go out and meet their sheriff or the chief of police in their neighborhood and yeah. get a feel for who you're dealing with and yeah. make relationships. And let them understand that you are awake.
And let them understand that basically you're on their side. You definitely want law and order, but then you want the law enforcement to represent you. Go back to the old idea to protect and to serve, okay? Not become some Gestapo for some federal tyranny.
You know, I got a question for you. We're starting to wind down. We're talking about the Gulf, which is, I got to have you back on and do the whole show about that. But what is the point of destroying the planet? I mean, as my mother used to say, you can only eat one steak at a time. And how rich do these dudes have to be? And what good is it anyway if the planet is burning?
Exactly. Unless you have the means to go off planet and you can go sit it out. And then come back and take over the planet.
You and I are so plugged in. I really, I mean, is that what they're doing up on Mars? Hello?
Yeah?
What do you say, Jim? Is that what they're doing? They're getting their nesting their little laboratories and setting themselves up to evacuate?
Do you understand what the term terraforming means?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, they're terraforming.
That's right. That's right. Although, if you take off the red hue on any of the pictures from NASA and you take it back down to center, you've got a very Earth-like surface, a little desert-looking, but very earthy.
That's right. Well, it couldn't be any worse than West Texas.
Jim, what have you got as a message for the people that have been listening to you tonight as far as what you believe is coming down and what do we have to look forward to?
Well, we are definitely going through an evolutionary step here for humankind, and as in any growth process, there's going to be some growing pains, so it's not going to be a totally pleasant thing, but it doesn't have to be a catastrophic thing either. Again, if we all just understand that there's more of us than there are of them, and we all agree to disagree, and we agree to disagree without being disagreeable, and we all start looking for our common ground rather than being pointed towards all our differences, which is what the media does today, then we can all start living a much better and productive life. And what I'm saying in reality is that, for instance, we could all agree to the idea of free speech. But the thing is, we have to understand that to truly protect free speech, that means free speech for everybody. Yes, even the people you disagree with. Yes, even stupid people, you know, but they still have freedom of speech, because if you ever start curtailing a freedom, then you're on a slippery slope, and then there's no guarantee that your freedom won't be curtailed. So the only way to guarantee your own personal freedom is to guarantee the freedom of every single person around you. And it's that simple, and I think we could all agree to that. And so let's just start talking in terms of what we agree with instead of being divided and conquered.
That's right. And to coin a hackney phrase that I've used all of my life, power to the people.
There you go.
So with that thought, I would like to remind you all that people like Jim and me and other people who are putting their proverbial asses on the line to keep bringing this message out to you. We need your support. And I'm not talking about money. I'm talking that you listen, you talk to more people. Yeah, buy the books too. It's really not true that we get rich from books. And spread the word. It's time for the human race to rise. And we're going to do it.
Power to the humans.
Power to the humans. All right. We've been listening to wonderful Jim Mars. His website again is www.jimmars.com. The book, one of many, is The $1 trillion Conspiracy. Jim, one last question. We're going to get some alien contact pretty soon here.
I think that the incidence of UFO activity around the world is increasing, and I think that the government forthrightness about what's really been going on is becoming more and more open. And that leads me to believe that as everyone becomes more aware and more acceptable of the idea that we're not alone, then that lays the groundwork for open contact. And I'm not going to say it's going to happen this year or the next, but I think we've definitely turned a corner, okay? And I think we're heading into new and uncharted territory. And if you think all the problems on this world have got you baffled, then you're really going to be bugged when you find out that we're only one of many worlds.
Absolutely. And hopefully you'll get past being bugged and get excited about the potential of being galactic humans. I've got to sign out now. Thanks a million, Jim. Thank you all for tuning in. Jim, you're going to come back again and again, right?
Sure.
All right. I thank you so much. My heart is with you. Thank you all for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you, implores you to get out of that box of conventional thinking and soar with the eagles. And remember, I'm back! Thanks for tuning in.